Rewind is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wiseye.org/donate or text WISEYE to 44321.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, the Trump and Harris campaigns return to the battleground state, this time making stops in areas they traditionally don't. Coming up, how both candidates are looking to chip away at vote margins this fall. Plus, what the latest Marquette University Law School poll tells us about the state of the race. And why the mayor of Wausau is now under investigation. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for October 4th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Well, a lot of more visits here in Wisconsin this week, as we are now less than 5 weeks until Election Day. Of course, we had Vice President Kamala Harris in town, as well as former President Donald Trump. Let's begin with the most recent visit, which was on Thursday, with Harris was joined by former GOP Congresswoman Liz Cheney, who just recently endorsed Harris for president about a month ago. And this was the first time that the duo appeared on stage together. The significance of this visit, doing so right in Ripon. It was around Ripon's college campus, but Ripon is known as a small town in northeastern Wisconsin that helped shape and form the Republican Party back in 1854. Meanwhile, on the other hand, the former president was in deep blue areas of the state, campaigning in Wanakee, which is in Dane County, and also in Milwaukee. When it came to the substance of the speech, going back to Harris, a lot of it had to deal with upholding the Constitution and really hammering former President Donald Trump for his actions on January 6th, which they say he failed to do so because of the attempt to overturn the 2020 election. Meanwhile, Donald Trump, at a press conference in Milwaukee, was asked about his lawsuits in 2020 from my colleague A.J. Biapour, asking, what do you say to voters in Milwaukee and Dane, where you tried to throw out their votes in 2020? So let's kind of hear some of the dueling narratives that we heard on the campaign trail here in Wisconsin this week, and we'll get more into the details of their visits.
I think they generally agreed with me. My voters generally agreed with me. And I think we have a really good chance of winning it. You know, there are counties that normally a Republican wouldn't win. But if you would see the crowds that we just left, if you'd see the crowds that we had on Saturday, I really think that we're going to win Wisconsin.
And therein lies the profound difference between Donald Trump and me. He, who violated the oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America. And make no mistake, he, who, if given the chance, would violate it again. Donald Trump lost the 2020 election.
So let's now just talk about the significance of where both candidates were. Of course, like I mentioned, in a Republican stronghold, Harris and Cheney campaigning in Fond du Lac County, an area that she's not likely going to win in November. On the other hand, same thing, former President Donald Trump in Dane County, in the city of Milwaukee, two Democratic strongholds, two counties he's also unlikely to win. But it's all part of the campaign strategy to try to appeal for Harris campaign, independent moderate voters. Meanwhile, Trump trying to chip away at Democratic margins in Dane and Milwaukee.
So looking at Dane County, it's the one area of the state that I've looked at over 20 years that's gotten bigger and more partisan to the extent that it has. I mean, this is a turnout machine for Democrats. And I've seen Republicans talk about, well, if Trump hits 25% in Dane County, he'll win guaranteed. That's not likely to happen. Joe Biden hit like 75%, just a little bit more than that, in 2020. Now, we had third-party candidates, and Trump was not 25% in 2020. But I don't see the people I talk to, him getting that mark. But if he gets to 23, 24, it opens up more paths for him to win statewide. And he's at 22. Dane County is a problem for Republicans because it is growing. Yes, 4 years ago they hit those marks, but we are bigger in Dane County than we were 4 years ago. We are actually bluer. We saw in the 2023 state Supreme Court race, I think it was 80%. Protasiewicz almost got 80% of the vote out of Dane County in 2023. Now that's a April election, different electorate, all that kind of stuff. But it shows you the machine that they have. And oh, by the way, in 2020, college kids weren't on campus. They were at home in November of 2020, where they're from, because they weren't there because of COVID. So how will the student turnout affect college kids affect turnout in Dane County? The growth in Dane County, what's going to happen with that? Likewise, with Harris going to Ripon, she's talking Republican statewide, trying to appeal that suburban Republican voter in Waukesha County, Ozaukee, for example. It's getting more purple all the time. Hey, you don't like this guy. It's safe to be with me, because here's Liz Cheney giving the seal approval from Liz Cheney, the Cheney family. Now, that seal comes with certain drawbacks. Liz Cheney's dad, Dick Cheney, they're part of a wing of the Republican Party that's kind of become passe for a lot of activists these days. It's been a more populist party. They're kind of, in those folks' view, the warmongering part of the party, the one that wants to be involved in international affairs. There's a more protectionist, isolationist strain for Republicans. So for a lot of the kind of the growth of Republicans, they're not really influential. But those traditional Republicans, those Paul Ryan types who were, you know, people from the suburbs, they may be open to that message from Liz Cheney. We'll see if it helps, but it can't hurt Harris when she pursues those voters.
Right, and I was on the ground in Ripon, and I asked, of course, there's mostly all Democratic voters here at these rallies to see Harris, to see Cheney. But one thing that voters said that stuck out to them is that she's still making a point to come, despite having probably no chance of winning that area. And it is about energizing the Democrats on the ground who are going to these rallies, talking to their friends, and, you know, and what, so forth. Meanwhile, on the other hand, too, you mentioned the Dane County voting trends. It is getting more blue, even though every time you talk to Republicans about these vote margins, they say, well, Dane County has the third most vote share of Republicans in the county. But the last time Republicans even came close to reaching, you know, the above 25% in a statewide election was in 2012. If you look at the margins here, Mitt Romney was the last one to do it successfully. Now, that was a long time ago. That was before the Trump era of politics. But, you know, speaking to people like the chair of the Dane County Republicans, they are firmly believe that if they can at least just chip away a little bit, it can help them overall statewide. Because no doubt, if, you know, you see Harris with 80% in Dane County, I mean, it's game over.
Yeah. One of my favorite stats in Wisconsin politics, in a Democratic primary, typical statewide Democratic primary, there are three counties that account for about 45% of the vote. Milwaukee, Dane, what's the third one, Emily?
I was looking at my notes. You caught me on guard.
Waukesha. There are a lot of people there. They're not. Yeah. No, they're more Republicans, but there are a lot of people. Same with Dane County. Now, the key to reaching them is the Trump operation. Mm-hmm. And that is a struggle for Republicans right now. Now, in talking to the two parties, we always get told, oh, we have this many offices, this many staffers. I can't check that to know for sure what's going on. The Democrats say they have 50 coordinating campaign offices across the state, 43 counties, 250 staffers. Republicans say they have 41-ish, something like that. Not sure how many staffers they have. But what I'm seeing is the Trump campaign is focused on election integrity, quote unquote. That's where he's putting his efforts. He is kind of relying on Turning Point USA to do a lot of the vote chasing stuff in Wisconsin and other swing states. Politico reported this week that Turning Point is joining forces with Elon Musk's group, America PAC. America PAC is going to pay for or fund a lot of activities at Turning Point USA. I've talked to a lot of Republicans this week who are not impressed with Turning Point as an operation because they haven't seen it work before. This is a new effort. It may be the best thing since sliced bread. It may work phenomenally, may be great, but they're unproven. There are a lot of younger people who are not experienced in politics running the show, chasing ballots. Whereas Democrats have a machine that's been refined election after election after election. They know how to do this stuff. My question is, if we are a true 50-50 state, and, you know, we'll see, it's a month yet from the election, turnout machines matter. Now, if there's a wave, look, in 2010, Republican wave, Democrats were not going to overcome that no matter how good the ground game was. Just like for Republicans in 2008, the Democratic wave, they were going to overcome that. But in a true jump ball election, your turnout matters. Your turnout game matters. That's where you can get a point or two, squeeze out of voters by chasing those who are casual voters, maybe aren't that excited to show up, but are maybe persuadable. That's what I'm watching for. How these polls progress through election day and then to how good the ground game is for each side to deliver a victory in Wisconsin.
Right. I think my money is also on probably the highest turnout that we're going to see, just because of, like you said, the growing population in Dane County as well. But we're also not in a pandemic, right? I mean, if people didn't know their options or maybe didn't vote absentee, I think we're going to see a lot more people heading to the polls too. Does that mean results will be in before 11 p.m.? I doubt it still. All right. Of course, another big story this week was the vice presidential debate. We just briefly want to touch on, you know, I think we've talked before, debates hardly really sway those undecided voters. But I think it was, I think overall, a very civil debate and a different tone that we have not seen, at least in a, I guess, since the Trump era, when it comes to two candidates agreeing with one another. You had J.D. Vance and Tim Walz often say, hey, yeah, I agree with you on that, but, and make a turn for the things. I will say overall, some of the takeaways for me is that Walz at first seemed a little nervous, couldn't get his footing down. J.D. Vance was pretty clear on his message. Kudos to him, because what he did, what a lot of Republican operatives wanted Trump to do in the campaign, was talk about the economy, blame things on the Harris campaign and try to tie her to inflation. I think he successfully delivered that message, which Trump, you know, during their debate with Harris, Harris got under his skin a little bit and he started more attacking Harris and a series of other things, not really the core issues. Meanwhile, on the other hand, another big moment where Walz eventually probably had a good point was talking about abortion rights. Of course, we know that is a key centerpiece of Democrats' campaign. And then at the end, towards the end of the debate, the discussion on 2020, Vance did not answer the question whether he thought Donald Trump lost the 2020 election. We're now seeing Trump back on the campaign trail this week, reiterating false claims that he won. It's something I think is more touchy for Democrats, but it is something that Democrats are going to keep criticizing Republicans for. But whether that message resonates with Republicans, oh, I'm not going to vote for them because they don't have faith in the elections, that's what I'm a little unsure about.
The whole charge running mates is do no harm. There wasn't really a viral moment from the campaign or from the debate. Now, there was that one about 2020. The Democrats put that in an ad right away. That, my impression talking to people, is not really motivating swing voters or Republicans. That's to jazz up your base. That is remind your Democratic base of just how much you dislike Donald Trump or anything else. I don't get the impression it's going to swing. If you're an undecided voter right now, whoever you are,
where are you?
Yes. Well, what are you not paying attention to? I'm not sure that's like your top three issue to decide on, but again, motivator for the base.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to findings of the Marquette University Law School poll this week. And wow, unchanged when it comes to the top of the ticket from just 3 weeks ago. Of course, these polls start to ramp up when they're in the field leading to Election Day. We're going to have one more. But when it comes to among registered and likely voters, no shift at all. However, it falls within the poll's margin of error. Talking to Charles Franklin after the poll release, he believes that, well, kind of the key finding is people really haven't changed their opinion at all, even based on the news cycle, because this poll was in the field shortly right after the debate between Trump and Harris. You know, I think it's proof is in the pudding. Doesn't really move a lot of voters, but still a close one here.
So a couple things to remember. The October poll from Marquette in 2016 and 2020, the Democrat up by 5 and 6 points roughly, depending on which sample you used. They were less than 1 point races on Election Day. The Marquette poll is the gold standard in Wisconsin for polling. However, there's been a history of one or two polls in the fall of being a little bit kind of out of whack. Charles's last poll is almost always pretty good. It missed some things in 2016. There was late movement after that poll with the whole Hillary Clinton email thing. The last one's usually pretty good. So I bring that up because I'm not sure that people believe it's a 4 point race or five with multiple candidates involved. They feel like it's a little tighter in Wisconsin. We are seeing consistency, though. Franklin brought up that things haven't changed a whole lot. He did note the unique coalition of Democrats. They're almost all behind Harris. It was 99% in this poll, 100 last time. That is rare to have that kind of consensus, even among partisans. That might be an issue, he said, but back-to-back polls. Harris is up about 60% among independents, a group that swings back and forth, but two polls in a row. So there may be good news in here, but if I were a Democrat talking to people this week, I would not feel real comfortable unless that last poll went up by 5 points, because what we saw in 2020 and 2016, I got, as a lot of reporters did in Wisconsin, this like call with the Biden campaign in 2020, last week before the election. We are up by X points. This is happening. We're going to win comfortably. That did not happen.
Right.
2016, people missed what was going on. You have to mention Trafalgar. There's a conservative group that got things kind of on the money in 2016. They had Trump up, quote unquote, by about a point. Now, all of them margin of error. That runs counter to this. I saw two other polls this week. They're all fairly consistent. I bring this up because I don't feel like in my conversations that people think that Harris is running away with Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. The consensus seems to be she has got an edge right now. There's enthusiasm on her side, infrastructure on her side, money on her side. She raised $55 million in California in two fundraisers this past weekend. Those are all good things. But there's this kind of like sense of, man, I saw it in 2020, saw it in 2016, JR. I'm not sure what's going to happen in these polls. So keep that in mind. This is not a race that's going to be comfortable unless it bucks the trend of 20 years in Wisconsin.
Right. And when it comes to voter enthusiasm, too, kudos to Republicans. They got a little bit more of closing the gap because right after Harris got into the race, enthusiasm skyrocketed to fill that void, basically, when President Joe Biden was still at the top of the ticket. So that was another takeaway that they're much closer. Harris still has a slight edge over Trump, but more Republicans and Democrats are about even, about very excited to vote in November. Moving on to the U.S. Senate race, kind of the headline here is Senator Tammy Baldwin expanded her lead over Eric Hovde from 3 weeks ago, the last poll. She is now up 53% to 46%, now with a I still think it's a little tight, but 7 points in different people's view I talk to. Some say it's comfortable. I just am holding my breath. It's going to be 7 points on Election Day.
I would bet you a drink it's not going to be 7 points. Now, what it does reflect, though, is there is definitely a lag for Hovde compared to Trump. There is a perception that Harris or Baldwin can run above Harris. So, okay, Harris 52, Tammy 53. Okay, that makes sense. Trump 48. Hovde 46, okay, that makes, he's trailing a little bit. But you have to make sure that the 4-point gap is real in one to buy the 7.1. And like I said, I don't know that I expect either Trump or Harris to win by 4 points in election in Wisconsin. Now, people I talk to could be surprised. It could be a miracle. You know, a comfortable night, an election night in Wisconsin in November for a presidential race. But I don't get the impression that this is a 7-point Senate race. There's just nothing that tells me that in Wisconsin, so purple as it is, mm-hmm. is going to deliver that wide of a gap. And we'll talk a little bit more in the stock report, stock picks, but again, the October numbers bounce around for Charles. Nothing, no fault in his polls, but tell me what's going to happen October 30th, the last Marquette poll. That's what I'm going to watch him for closely.
Right. It's going to come to the Wednesday before the election, so we'll keep our eyes and ears peeled out for that one. All right. Moving on to news that dropped last Friday, which deals with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. We've talked about this for many, many weeks now, and now the case is closed. And what I mean by that is the state Supreme Court did formally reject his request to remove his name from Wisconsin's presidential ballots after a very lengthy legal battle. Now, since dropping out of the presidential race, Kennedy has fought to stay off the ballot in key swing states where many believed he could possibly hurt former President Donald Trump's chances this fall. This leads to the Marquette poll, because this is what Charles Franklin, poll director, you know, predicted, that support over time will likely drop from Kennedy. And that was kind of proof right here in October. Look back from August. He was polling at 8%. That's when he dropped out of the race in the second poll. September, still receiving 6%, which was still a little worrisome to some people. But now it's 3%, and it could go down to 2% or 1%, mm-hmm. possibly in the next poll as well.
So go back to the Trump thing again. Are those people real, true RFK voters? Like, they're true believers. They'll vote for RFK or nobody on November 5th. Or are they Republicans who don't want to commit to Trump because they don't like something about him? They can't vote for Harris, so in the end, they'll drift back toward Trump. Well, then that 52-48 closes down to 52-49, maybe, right? I mean, doesn't add to 100, but you get my drift. Like, mm-hmm. it might close the gap a little bit. With the Supreme Court ruling from last week, they didn't really get the merits of Kennedy's argument. Basically, what it was is that their review was limited to the Dane County judge rejected a request for a temporary injunction to bar the Elections Commission from certifying ballots with Kennedy on it. And the review was, did the judge commit a mistake? And you read through the decision, the court basically said, we aren't impressed with your arguments, RFK Jr. You didn't develop these things very well. Our review of the judge's decision and the criteria used, there's no mistake. You didn't prove one. Now, it's interesting, it's a unanimous decision. Worth noting that conservative justices, Rebecca Bradley and Ziegler, had a concurring opinion, complained about the timeline. Basically, like, there are big issues here, but because of how this is structured, what we were dealt with, we couldn't get into them. We're limited to this one piece. We concur that the RFK Jr. arguments were not really well developed, but there wasn't a whole time to do that. And you have this catch-22 of, do you go to the Supreme Court right away for original action, or the circuit court, and this whole kind of like legal process stuff. Mm-hmm. But they hinted they weren't happy about it. Well, here's the thing. 4 years ago, the same thing happened with the Green Party. They sued in early September to get on the ballot because the election was deadlocked, and Republicans complained bitterly, like, this is crazy that there wasn't enough time for this lawsuit. Nobody changed anything from 4 years ago to today. And that's part of the problem with all these complaints here about election stuff. We've known these issues for a while. Nobody's addressed them. Nobody's tried to address them. So if you're going to complain about, well, it's not fair that RFK is on the ballot, why don't you address this 4 years ago when you had the chance to spread that timeline out and provide more time for legal.
Could be different this time around with Representative Scott Krug. He is the chairman of the Assembly Elections Committee. Mm-hmm. He did say he would like to make some changes to make it easier for candidates to remove their name off the ballot after they've already filed nomination papers. What that legislation looks like, when that will come up, will it pass, will it get support from Governor Evers, are all questions.
And the challenge is, whenever Republicans anymore do an election bill, there is a pressure to load it up
with a bunch of other stuff
that makes Trump supporters happy because their base is screaming election fraud, all that kind of stuff. You're never going to bill past Tony Evers that says A, B, and C to make Trump happy. A clean bill on early count for absentee ballots, like, that would pass. A clean bill, maybe change timelines, that might pass. But I don't see a path for a clean bill because of the pressure of these other things that, from the Republican base.
All right. Also this week, there was a new presidential electors sworn into the book, per se, here ahead of the November election. So Democrats and Republicans picked new electors on Tuesday. And why we're bringing this up, because it was almost 4 years ago after Republicans posed as fake electors for former President Donald Trump in an attempt to overturn the 2020 election results. But this time around, no issues. We'll see what happens after the election, but most have vowed that they're not going to challenge or pose as fake electors again in this election cycle.
In my entire career, I have never once before covered an electors election meeting.
I don't think anyone has, but because of what happened 4 years ago, it was newsy.
And Matt Fisher, state GOP spokesperson, made a point of telling us after the GOP meeting that if the Elections Commission certifies Kamala Harris as the winner or a third-party candidate, these electors will not have mm-hmm. any role. They are not going to convene and sign paperwork to cast ballots for Trump if it's certified for Harris. Now, I am a cynic by nature. I question if it's a 50-50 race and Trump loses, if there will not be pressure from Donald Trump to repeat what happened 4 years ago. They're telling us right now, no, you guys will not have any consequence whatsoever, but let's see what happens if we're 15,000, 20,000 votes apart November 6th and 7th, after all the counting
right.
is done, we'll see.
And some of those Republicans that would be calling, the new faces who are electors now, Fond du Lac District Attorney Eric Toney, Brian Schimming since he's become chairman, he's a new face now, former Governor Tommy Thompson. On the Democratic side, some new faces, Madison Mayor Satya Rose Conway and Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. All right, let's move on to the latest with the Dropbox situation in Wausau, because it was on September 22nd that Wausau Mayor Doug Dinney went upon himself, put on a hard hat, got a dolly, and picked up and moved the Dropbox into his office because his argument, it wasn't bolted to the ground. Well, then on Monday, it appeared bolted on the ground. Now the Wisconsin Department of Justice is looking into this whole removal of Wausau's only absentee Dropbox. So we'll see where this goes, but definitely been a fascinating story that has developed over the past week.
Yeah, was there criminal intent? That'll be up to investigators to decide. The Dropbox is being used right now, so it doesn't like it interfere with people returning ballots, but it could be an issue for Mayor Dinney.
All right, let's get to stock picks this week. And rising is mega donors off some numbers that you dived into this week.
You know, my finance reports, Emily, every time they come out. So this time was noteworthy is that the state Democratic Party had donations of $2.25 million from Reid Hoffman, who is the founder of LinkedIn, $2 million from J.B. Pritzker, the Illinois governor. The state GOP got $1.1 million from Diane Hendricks, Illinois businesswoman, Beloit businesswoman. But then I also looked at the reports from the four legislative campaign committees. Diane Hendricks and Liz Uline, Illinois businesswoman, gave $6.3 million to the Assembly and Republican caucuses. That is a lot of money. It's also allowed because of a change in state law in 2015. Republicans authored to allow unlimited contributions to caucus committees and parties and unlimited transfers from those committees and caucuses to candidates. It's changed the entire complexion of Wisconsin races at its legislative level. Going through the reports, you see the results of that. The State Democratic Party is like basically funding the Assembly Democratic Campaign Committee, the State Senate Democratic Committee, to then give money to candidates. RAC are getting the money directly from those two donors. They're going to their candidates. We're seeing multiple races of more than $400,000 right now in the Assembly. That is crazy.
Wow.
Jody Habersinikin, running the 8th Senate District, has more than $3 million in TV reservations between Labor Day and Election Day. That was a congressional campaign, a competitive one, two, three cycles ago. It is amazing to see this kind of money floating around. Then I went and looked, just got kind of curious, the changes from pre-2015 to now. In 2014, the same two-month period that this latest election, is, these finance reports covered, there were about, three dozen transactions of $50,000 or more, about $11 million. Now, of that, $2 million came from Mary Burke, who was running for governor at the time, gave her own campaign $2 million, so really $9 million. Looking at these reports, I found 120 roughly transactions of 50 grand or more, totaling almost $29 million.
Wow.
It shows you how influential big donors are. And now, years ago, this would be in Republicans' favor, and you hear Democrats crying foul. You don't hear anybody crying foul anymore because they're both benefiting from the system, which is allowing their big donors to have a huge impact on what's happening in the Wisconsin election.
That's a whole lot of money. Mm-hmm. All right. And Mix this week is going back to the U.S. Senate race with Eric Hovde with a significant ad buy.
So look, if this was a seven-point race, the Senate Leadership Fund would not be spending $17 million in Wisconsin. So looking at, and you know, I'm a dork about ad buys too, been watching them all through the fall. And what I've noticed is that Hovde was kind of even with Baldwin the first couple, 3 weeks after the primary. But in the 3 weeks after, like the rest of September, he's getting outspent 2-1. So in comes SLF, which is aligned with Mitch McConnell, the GOP leader in the Senate. They're promising $17 million in the Senate race. Looking at the ad buys right now, at Impact, it's picked about $11.2 million. So they're missing $5.8 million. It might be on digital ads, which are tougher to track, might be coming later on. But with that infusion of cash, Hovde is poised to outspend Baldwin the last weeks of the race. Hovde is unique. So Baldwin laid down her money early, which is advantageous. If you have the cash to do that, it's advantageous. You get a better rate and better placement of your ads. Hovde's been buying like a couple weeks out. He hasn't placed the last 2 weeks, I believe, last time I checked. Once he does, he should be outspending Baldwin by a significant amount through the election. That's alarm bells going off for Tammy Baldwin. Like, this is a closer race than what you think it is to the Marquette poll. Now, the issue for Hovde is I can't find a single person who's told me that if Kamala Harris wins Wisconsin, Eric Hovde can win the Senate race. Everybody to a person tells me that they believe Hovde needs Trump to win. So if that Marquette poll is correct and Harris is winning, likely Tommy Baldwin's going to win a third term in the U.S. Senate. The question is, if it's a jump ball presidential race and Trump ekes out a victory, how far ahead can Tammy Baldwin run of Eric Hovde? Thoughts a point or two. Worth noting, she's done a lot of work to kind of get that cross-party appeal. The Wisconsin Farm Bureau this week endorsed her for re-election.
Mm-hmm.
First time in at least 2 decades they've endorsed a Democrat in a statewide election. That shows you the work she's done. Now, will it resonate with those voters? Again, we talked about it's not about winning and ripping for Tammy Baldwin or up north in Wausau. It's getting just enough that if Trump wins Wisconsin by 22,000 votes again, she can beat Eric Hovde. That's the big question.
She does have the support in the rural areas because she's done her work up there. All right, and just real quickly following this week, Tierman Spencer.
Former Milwaukee City Attorney lost in April, now facing a felony misconduct office charge, basically tried to avoid these fee for inspection of a building hit where his cars were being stored. Not great to lose an election and be charged a felony account a few months later.
All right. Well, that will do it this week for another busy week in politics. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, Your Week in Review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.